Hi, and welcome to the Ready for Polyamory podcast. As always, I'm your host, Laura Boyle, and I'm here to chat with you about polyamory, non-monogamy in general, and relationships that fall outside of mono norms. Right? So this week, I'm here with the author of the great new memoir, Entwined, Alex Alberto, to talk about their new memoir, as well as the value of storytelling, representation, and a bunch of other kind of fun things. Before we get into that interview, I just want to say thank you all for listening and for being here as we start yet another season of the podcast. I'm hoping we're going to get 10 or 11 episodes out this spring before we launch into a summer run-up into my book tour this fall. In case you haven't been following me everywhere on social media, I know, I'm secretly a celebrity and you all follow me everywhere, right? My book, Monogamy in This Economy, Child Rearing, Finances, and Other Practical Concerns of Polyamory is coming out in August, and I'm super excited about that. I hope you guys are too. And Alex and I talk a tiny bit about that in the middle of the interview, because this is what writers do. We end up gassing each other up in the middle of interviews. So, without further ado, here's me and Alex talking about their wonderful memoir, Entwined. And I hope to be releasing this episode just in time for the Trans Readathon week, which it's an appropriate release for, both because Alex himself is trans, and because the book deals a little bit with their coming out story and their queerness, as well as their polyamory. So I hope you enjoy the interview, and I'll see you here afterwards. So thank you so much for joining me today, Alex. I'm very excited to talk with you about your new book, Entwined.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
So I really loved reading this book of essays because, and I guess this is sort of spoilers, but not really. It's just the concept of the book. So this is a series of essays about your polyamorous journey. And I loved it because getting an actual queer perspective on polyamory is such a breath of fresh air in this like field of books presently available to us.
Yes.
It was lovely for me. So
amazing.
Thank you for the book. And I would like to open with a question that you are probably going to get in every interview that you do about this. Which is your favorite essay from the collection? And will you tell us a little bit about it?
That is so funny. It's actually the first time I get it, and I've done quite a few interviews, so I do appreciate the question. And anytime anyone asks me, I have been asked, what's your favorite memoir? Or, you know, questions like that. And I always answer, you're asking a polyamorous writer to choose one?
I mean, you're allowed to say more than one if you really want, but like you'll have to tell us about all of them.
Yeah, so I love many of them for different reasons. I think one that stands out, maybe I'll say one that I'm the proudest of perhaps, is Scenes from a Polyamorous Coming Out on Thanksgiving. And so for your listeners, my book is, so each essay is kind of a self-contained story, but they are all connected, so they do together tell the greater story of kind of my over a decade journey into polyamory and what that looked like for me. And that, and each essay is written, or many essays are written in different forms. So I have a love letter, I have at some point a list, I have
I really enjoyed the play.
Yeah, there you go. So this one, Scenes from a Polyamorous Coming Out on Thanksgiving, is written like a play. So you really see like everybody's line of dialogues, but you also get some of my internal emotions and thoughts. And this was very hard to write. It's when my partner and I introduced our other partner to his parents, who are Southern and came to New York for Thanksgiving. And it's just two scenes of us sitting around a table. And the reason I wrote it like a play is that I really wanted to capture the tension and sort of like these things that people don't say, but that live in between the lines. And I wrote it very fast because it was a very, very tense dinner. Spoiler alert, it does not end well. but I also wanted to write it because I feel like we see a lot of coming out stories of queerness. We don't see as many coming out stories of polyamory. And I wanted to be able to, have some people who lived things like that feel seen, but also model for other parents or family members the consequences that can impact people. So yeah, it feels very special to me because it's one where I really got creative and outside of the box when I thought of writing this one as a play.
Yeah, and so I really loved reading it, and also I love polyamorous coming out stories. Like, folks who listen to the podcast know this because I did a two-part series where I made a bunch of my friends come and like talk about all of their experiences. I am a mushy, soft person, and so I love talking about these big emotional experiences that we have, whether they happened to have gone well at the time or not, and how we can put into the world ways that we wish that they would have gone or ways that they went well so that other people have something to go from, right? Because I feel like over time we've slowly built a little bit of a positive script for how people can positively
Definitely.
respond to their kids coming out to them about forms of queerness, but we have not built a script yet for what to do when someone comes out to you as polyamorous.
There's something being a queer person, because a question I got recently was, which coming out was the hardest for you? Because I had to come out as bisexual. Pansexual is the word I prefer, but for some people, I'll use bisexual because it's easier. And then coming out as genderqueer and also coming out as polyamorous. And it really, I guess it depended on the person and the situation, but I find that polyamory is harder for people to grasp, which I'm sure when you've talked to many people, but it's almost like people have started to think, okay, you can be gay, but like do everything the same, everything else the same, and it's almost like polyamory, even though it has nothing to do with them, they almost feel like perhaps it attacks their own life when really it has nothing to do with them.
Well, right. And it's culturally, we've enshrined the relationship escalator very hard. And the relationship escalator is this series of norms that, like, is simultaneously very heteronormative and very cisnormative. But people who are deeply invested in it and think of themselves as very open-minded like to go, oh, but we will expand our understanding of the relationship escalator to allow gay people to also climb the escalator. You gay folks may also have a monogamous marriage that follows this exact pattern.
Exactly.
It's so like the idea of like poster childing these structures. Sorry, I have spent a bunch of my day planning or like expanding on the planning for this class that Annie and Dunn and I are doing on dismantling the relationship escalator. So my brain is very
Amazing.
deeply in that and talking about the ways that like where lots of queer folks have already done this work of taking apart these norms and then they turn around and they have folks telling them, no, but culturally you really ought to fit more tightly into that, not less. Polyamorous folks are often for the first time encountering any part of that. And they go, oh, well, we can just step one step sideways and stop here.
Which is also why I think, in a way, I feel like if we had said, no, we just have sex with other people every once in a while, it would have been kind of easier for them to
Swinging
grasp.
is understandable.
Yeah, exactly. It's like digestible.
Right. They don't like it, but they can sort of go, oh, well, you didn't need to tell us, but you go do that on your own time.
Yeah, which is nice because in my book I have that experience, which was really, really difficult. But then there's also an essay about my gender queerness. And in that essay, I dive a lot into my French Canadian culture and how language, because French is so gendered, how much basically living my life in English has been helpful for me to access my gender queerness. But I got a review from someone who thanked my mother in their review because they said, oh, I really just appreciated the character of the mother and how welcoming and loving she was. So I'm kind of glad that in both in my life and in the book, they're both, you know, the book is a version of my life. There's kind of these two different parental figures who have reacted very differently to who I am.
And so you're able to show that balance in a way. And I feel like that's the experience of lots of people. Like, we don't have a monolithic response when we come out, even if it's not our parents uniquely, right? Sometimes it's that our parents are one force and our friends or our work environment or some other portion of our life is the other force, right? But very few of us have monolithic responses to our coming out attempts.
Yeah, that's very true.
And like, I feel like in
Yeah,
your
there's
essay series, this is really encompassed by the fact that you're changing on so many levels, right? Your non-monogamy is shifting, your relationship to your gender is shifting, all of these things. Like, and I don't know whether it's your awareness of your gender or your relationship to your awareness, because I don't, not having had your personal experience, it's just my
Sure.
interpretation of what you wrote down, right? But it was very interesting to read through the process, right? And all those changes on all those fronts over the years that are encompassed here, I think gives a lot of play for different people in your life to react in different ways and show a whole spectrum of that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I thought about it a lot, the arc in the book, as far as like my internal shifts. I haven't spent so much time thinking about it as far as like how the other people around me have kind of re reacted to this evolution. That's really interesting. Yeah, because the subtitle of my book is Essays on Polyamory and Creating Home, and for me in the book, it's creating home in my family structures and my polycule geographically, but also in my body, you know? Yeah, so the story is very much about all of those shifts.
And like, it's a really beautiful portrayal of that, of finding the places where you're actually comfortable, because geographically you go a few different places. Right, you land upstate after all these different moves, and like you're in a different country by the end, you know, like it's all these little changes that add up to a whole movement, which I think is really satisfying as a reader.
Thank you. Yeah.
And as someone who mostly reads novels, not essays, I still found it really engaging.
Thank you.
And so I very much appreciated it, and I suggest that folks go and pick it up.
Yeah, I think essay, you know, in creative nonfiction, essays are basically kind of standalone short stories, but I think a lot of people will think opinion essay or, you know, something a bit more documentary, but they're really just short stories, if you will. So it does, a lot of it does read like a novel.
I think folks are not always prepared for memoir, right? Like, the power of memoir is actually really important, especially in a community like ours, for putting our stories forward. What it seemed from the like introduction at the beginning that these were essays that you were sort of writing or writing about in real time, and then you reconstructed later or constructed the order later. Is that correct? Or what was the process like of putting this together?
Yeah, so a lot of the essays have been written, I'd say, more intensively on a period of perhaps 3 years. But while I think from the moment that I started exploring non-monogamy, I knew I wanted to write about it. So I did a lot of documentation. And that included even recording the audio of conversations I had with some partners, who were, you know, very generous and really wanted, I think they also had a vested interest in more stories of polyamory being out. So I took a lot of notes. I don't journal traditionally. I guess my journaling is usually when I know I want to write at some point about something. So I'll be like, oh, I want to write about, like I have an essay that's called Ways of Seeing My Metamour. And I wanted to write about kind of the different layers of a relationship with a metamour. So I'll have kind of a concept in mind and then I'll keep adding notes on the go. And I think, yeah, I wasn't able to think about, I never really wanted to tell a story that has kind of a chronological, traditional, reads exactly like a novel, beginning, middle, end, because I guess, yeah, my experience was so varied and I was really excited to play in the way that I tell the story. So I picking the order of the essays was very hard. A lot of them are in chronological order, but they do overlap because sometimes an essay will cover kind of more than just, a separate point in time. But
Right,
yeah,
there's at least
most
one
of
of them that's like beginning, intermediate, and advanced sort of
yes.
structure. So that one obviously covers a number of years, right? Like,
Yeah, that's another, now that you mention it, that's another of my favorite ones. It's a really fun one. I was thinking like, oh, so many things have changed over 10 years, and I wanted to look at big things and small things. So, okay, managing sheets in the bed. What did that look like at the beginning of my journey versus middle versus seasoned, or bigger things like asking someone out and having to like disclose that you're polyamorous in the process and, different things like that. So, yeah, this one definitely goes across the whole 10 years.
Yeah, like some of the things I felt really seen in parts of that essay because it's like the anxiety and details in the very beginning parts, and then the like casualness of the end. And the ways the middles are all over the place in the different categories. And like none of those categories matched which of my categories were still anxious when, but I recognized all of them as places
Sure.
that I'd stopped along the way. And I'm like, oh, okay, good. These are universal, right? Like, so anyway, I found the whole book like extremely validating and really beautiful, right? And like, I don't have the same kind of journeys and experience with gender, but I found it really interesting and beautiful to read. And I think folks who do have like a journey that is anywhere near where yours is will find it really validating. And folks who don't will still find it really interesting and nice and good representation that we just don't have, right? Like,
Yeah, it's I often say we need so many stories, and this is just one, and this is sort of my contribution of my personal stories. But as you've talked to so many people and your listeners, like they have experiences all over the place, and right now it's so underrepresented. And unfortunately, the little part that is represented often ends up being of a somewhat similar style of non-monogamy, like something typically hierarchical, something typically cis and heterosexual. So I just hope that we can get, we can just like expand the mosaic of of stories.
yeah, and really, the more stories we can get out into people's hands and into people's minds, I think the more vivid the kind of patchwork of people's understanding will get.
Yep.
And I just want it to be like, at also, can I say that your cover is beautiful? And everyone who's seen it on my
Thank
desk
you.
in the last few weeks has been like, oh, what book is that? So you made excellent
Amazing.
choices.
I love hearing that. I do really love that cover, and it was quite the process to get there, but the designer is amazing.
Look, I love it. And I've had at least two people walk into my office this week and be like, what's that? So, but really, I think there's just so much to be said for this idea of like giving more in our stories. And just on the issue of like representation more broadly, do you have like favorite stories that are out there, favorite memoirs, favorite queer stories and polyamorous stories that are out there, even if it's not super officially published, right? Like, do you have
Yeah.
blogs that you like, creators that you like, books that are out, books that are coming out, people you'd
Yeah.
recommend?
So I've been really steeped into the memoir space, because that's what I've been writing, and there's so many amazing creators who do education that I love, and you're one of them. And people, it's funny because now that the book is out, people will often want, they sort of end up asking me for advice or for education, and my answer is
That's
always
not what I do.
like there are a lot of people online who do that, and like I actually kind of want to curate a list on my website for that reason. I really like, I describe myself as a storyteller, and what I want to do is just like stay in the story realm. And in terms of the memoirs that are out there, there's one from a few years ago, Many Love by Sophie Lucido Johnson.
Yes,
Have
I
you read
love
it?
it. Yeah, Sophie's amazing.
Yeah, it was kind of one of the first ones that I read, and that I was like, okay, because so many that I read, I mean, not that there are many out, but often they were kind of, I don't know, either ended up in a return to monogamy or a breakup or something like that. And that was the first time that I read something and thought, okay, somebody is kind of going through a journey, as many of us do, which does mean deconstructing hierarchical notions of love, which I've had to do. And it's really interesting because I started my journey when I was unpartnered. Like a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people who are represented in memoirs, and other stories will kind of go from a monogamous relationship and open it. And despite me having been totally on my own and be like, okay, I'm seeking non-monogamy, I don't know what it's gonna look like, you kind of still, it's so hard because society is structured for pairs. And I remember meeting a lot of couples at the beginning and being a little bit disappointed because I was very much fetishized and seen as, and which nothing against that. Like, I think if it works for everybody involved, but I very quickly realized that I wanted something more committed, and that had more sort of sharing of day-to-day life. And that just wasn't going to happen with those couples. So I found myself in a primary type partnership. And then in the book, you kind of see me slowly deconstructing that and moving away from it. So really loved Many Love. And I saw, I'm actually really excited. I forget. So Polyamorous Black Girl, I think I saw there was a memoir coming out next year with Torn Apple. So I'll be really excited to see that. And another one from Sophie Lucido Johnson that I liked that is actually present in my book is Love Without Sex. It's actually an Audible only. You also listen to it?
I haven't listened to it yet, but it's in my TBR list.
It's amazing because that's another thing that I find it's getting more and more represented, but kind of asexuality or gray sexuality or just platonic romantic relationships are, I don't know, a lot. I feel like in polyamory, a lot of people focus on the sexual aspect of it. And that was also a big part of my journey, kind of my changing relationship to sexuality and discovering platonic romance and things like that. So even though it's not about polyamory per se, it was a book that made me feel very, very seen.
Right. I feel like shifting our conversations around those and including like a full legitimization of those relationships is a really important step forward in the way we perceive polyamory in public. You know what I mean? Because I simultaneously don't want us to do a like shaming of people's sexuality. I don't want it to be like polyamory is about many loves. Please get out of here if you're having that dirty, nasty sex. But also, I want us to acknowledge these non-sexual relationships as equally valid and equally romantic and entangled and important, and that our relationships don't have to end if we decide that sexuality isn't one of the parts that we're going to continue having as constituent, right? So, yeah, I'm with you, I'm on board.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it comes down again to just like how much of a wide diversity of stories we need so that all of those things are well represented.
Right. And it's one of those things where, like, I keep getting on my soapbox and being like, we're not actually that small a community, you guys. We can do it. Just keep talking.
Yeah.
Be loud.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I just came back from my book tour, and I stopped by Cleveland, and there was I had an event at a bookstore that on an evening, and I found out just maybe a week before that there was kind of like the very first non-monogamous meetup from, I guess there's a new Open Love Cleveland or something,
Cool.
and but the person who organizes it has been mostly doing education in the swinging space.
Oh, cool.
So a lot of her audience are swingers, and we had a lot of conversations about how there's kind of this big divide between the swinging community and the polyamorous community. And I don't know, it was just really interesting because I feel like I dipped my toe in the swinging community at the very beginning of my journey, and then realize, okay, that's just personally, that's probably not where I want to hang for. Just I was
Right.
seeking something different. I was kind of like very naturally on the polyamorous and now relationship anarchy side of things. But it's not all one or the other, you know, like I have a lot of people that I know who will want to go to like a swinging party or a sex club or something like that every once in a while. But there's almost this like, oh, swingers will think this is the one way to do it, and then you know other people in the other camp will say, well, we have the better way of doing it. And there's this kind of like strange animosity is probably too strong a word, but
It's a little bit animosity. And like, also, as
right.
someone who's deeply involved in the kink space, there's a lot of like kinksters and swingers being angry at each other about how different sex parties are run. And it's the same kind of like everybody being a little bit holier than thou and everyone thinking their method of running things is better than somebody else's. And it's like, no, we just need clear ground rules for how this situation is running. And everyone needs to opt in to how this situation is running. How about that?
Yeah, and we did have an interesting discussion because she is particularly trying to make the swinging space more inclusive. And I think that's one of the big differences that like there are certain kink parties or sex parties that are just way queerer, way more, you know, inclusive and welcoming in that way. And that typically there are like a lot of swinging space that are not. But like if we tried to see everybody under the same umbrella, like we're already all kind of, you know, doing something out of the norm and trying to figure out how to exist. Like, I don't know. It just ended up being an interesting conversation that I hadn't been thinking about, I guess, for a while, because none, like in my day-to-day life, I'm not in circles where a lot of people are kind of deep in that part of the swinging community.
Yeah, there's a lot of these like conversations about the borders of where these things are and how do we meet the different cultural needs of these different groups. So that we can effectively be under one umbrella for some of these like places where we maybe are one cohort, right? We're getting, I don't know, whatever level of protection we might need legally in terms of not having this be a problem for us if it ever gets brought up as a legal matter in like a child custody case or things like this, right? Where it's only a problem if you're actually behaving inappropriately. I just, you know, social norms are changing, my guys. I love that, like, that is happening, but also that we're in a horrible, like, conservative backswing time. So that's happening not fast enough, and also with the worst Supreme Court possible. You know, totally chill. Once again, folks, you can't see me, so I'm making tons of hand gestures and horrible faces that Alex is struggling to not laugh at. That is what's happening here as we both try
I'm
to compose
also
ourselves.
nodding dramatically.
Yeah, as we try to compose ourselves somewhat. But yeah, so I think all of that is where we get to when we complete Not that we're ever complete at it, but like as we move along this path of like deconstructing these socially appointed notions of like how our relationships must be, we reach a point where it's like, okay, but which of these things do I want? And which of these things do I think I should want? Well, let me see what other people want versus what they think they should want. And then let me figure out what I have in common with them and what I don't.
Yeah.
And it leaves us all in a much better place to collaborate about it or to decide we don't really have anything in common. And that's good for you, buddy. You go do that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's why stories are so good for me. It's like I like to immerse myself into someone's reality, whether it's fictional and it's a good story or if it's, you know, like a memoir like we were talking about. Because when I was much younger, I kind of needed something. I needed examples of what I could even dream of, right?
Yes.
And if you trade one model for the other, I mean, it might be the right one for you and that's great. But if it's not, chances are it might, a version of it might be the right one, but you know, it needs a lot of fine tuning and a lot of co-design and customization. So I think figuring out how to show different versions of a dream love and family life is something that we're starting to build, but there's a long way to go.
Right. And stories are such a powerful method of giving us these possibilities that people maybe haven't even imagined for themselves and providing more of them so that people who are just starting to think about what they might want is really important. And there are lots of folks who are where we were 10 years ago, right? 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Thinking about what they might want. And rather than sort of sitting on the internet with the people who some of my colleagues are fighting with on Threads today, who are making jokes about domestic violence if someone asks them if they'll be polyamorous. Oof. Instead of doing that, they can read a story about possibilities and decide if those possibilities are for them or not, instead of seeing somebody make those hateful comments and go, oh my God, everyone will hate me if I think about this.
Yeah, they can also get, I mean, I just got your first book last week, which I'm excited about. I flipped through it. I'm also very excited when you told me that you self-published it, because I'm a big champion of, you know, artists and creators and writers just kind of taking their content into their own hands and putting it out of the world in their own terms. So that's very exciting. That's kind of what I did with my book, except I started a collective of independent authors. And I'm excited for your next book.
Yeah, at the end of the summer, my next book is coming out from Jessica Kingsley Publishers, which is an imprint of Hachette. That's in August, at the end of August. And I'm very excited for that because that's a whole bunch of different stories that people can sort of potentially see themselves in about all the various different ways that people have organized their polyamorous households or disorganized them. There's two chapters on breakups, right? But like, it's all about these different stories wherein we can see ourselves or not see ourselves or decide that these possibilities sound like they make sense. Because all these questions that we keep asking each other about how this can work need answering at some point, even if they're only answered in our imaginations.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, you in my book, you see me grappling at some point because there was kind of three of us and we moved upstate and we had this house and we were having very logistical questions like who sleeps where and how. And, you know, something that I've discovered is that I really love sleeping alone, which is so delightful. But it's really weird because that's another thing I've had to deprogram because there's kind of this narrative of like, oh, if you don't sleep with your partners, then you must not like love them, or you know what I mean? There's kind of like this,
your date night is not as valid if you go to your own bed after.
Kind of, exactly. And then I was like, wait a minute, no, like my relationships are great and I love sleeping alone. but the book doesn't end kind of in a happily for a long time after, you know. I trade that for the forever after. But I am in the process again of like doing another round of like now there's kind of other members of the polycule and we're kind of trying to look at okay, how does that look like for everybody to kind of move upstate and share, you know, a house and land and hopefully like another kind of cabin next to it and basically I'll need your book is what I'm saying.
Amazing. I'm glad that you'll have it. But also, my personal dream for the future is a piece of land and lots of tiny houses because I don't want to deal with logistics again. I've done it, but I don't want to. So every time people ask
Aren't
me
we?
about this, I'm like, I want secret infinite money and lots of tiny houses on a big piece of land. I understand that that's not actually what's ever going to happen, but if you want to know my pie in the sky dream.
I mean, we have the same one, and that's funny because I think a lot of people have, and I'm like, aren't we all predictable? But we really
We're
lucked
all
out. We
just
bought this.
millennials.
Yeah, exactly. It's not even just polyamorous people, honestly, at this point. But yeah, we were lucky because we bought this property. Like I bought this property with a partner and then with two close friends. And it's about 3 hours from New York City, so it's a bit kind of out of the way. And we landed here, one, because it was much cheaper than everything else in sort of other areas of upstate, but also because there's no zoning. And zoning is extremely, extremely limiting. Like when we were looking for properties, most places would say, okay, only single family homes, and some zoning codes would literally define a family is no more than X amount of adults who are not related by blood, marriage, or adoption. And
I've
yeah,
got a chapter
so,
on zoning.
oh my God, I'm
The
so excited
history
that
of
you have a
zoning.
chapter on
It's
zoning.
not a full chapter on zoning, but it's like half a chapter on zoning because zoning is such a problem. And like finding places where you're not as limited by zoning. And I then had to add a section about how zoning is not such a problem outside the US because we're simultaneously releasing in the UK and Canada. But like in the US, since the 1910s, zoning is a huge problem. Because we're racists.
Exactly.
But, you know, so yes, zoning is a huge problem. A polyamorous family here in Connecticut won a zoning lawsuit
What?
in 2014, 2015. I'm gonna not get the year right, but I was in law school, so it's somewhere between 2014 and 2016. And basically, they argued that for the purposes of single family zoning, they were a single family because they were all like raising their kids together and living in a house that was plenty large enough for them because it was like a mansion on the West End of Hartford. But like they were like, we bought this mansion and our neighbors are just annoyed that like in their NIMBY kind of attitude, there are four cars outside the house instead of two.
I'm glad they won. I'm sure I
I
don't
mean, it took
totally
them like
understand
2 years and a ton of money, but
Yeah, that's awful. Hopefully it sets legal precedent. I have no idea how these work. I hear they're a
no, it's
thing.
town by town zoning, so it
Ugh.
means in that city they're fine.
Okay.
Welcome to the Northeast. Everything is town by town. You don't even win the county. This is America. Everything is terrible and no one wins. I'm
Why am
sorry,
I
that's
here
deeply
again?
depressing, but
Yeah. The book isn't depressing, I promise.
look, the book, much less depressing, both yours and mine. In fact, I find the positive things to sit on, and yours is an uplifting tale of finding home and family throughout your polyamorous journey of about 10 years. So, thank you so much for joining me and chatting with me about Entwined: Essays on Polyamory and Creating Home, which is out now from Quilted Press.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure.
And I will put links where the book can be purchased in the show notes. Also, your website. Is there anything else you want me to stick in the show notes?
I'm actually on the verge of launching kind of a monthly magazine where I will write some stories, but I will also curate other people's stories because I basically want to create a space where you have narratives about polyamory. So if you have listeners who are interested, I'm going to send you the link and they can get in touch if they want to write something. But I'm also looking for people to interview because not everybody's a writer, but so many different people have completely different realities and families and love lives. And I would like to have kind of a place where we allow people to immerse themselves in lots of different stories. So I'll be working on that and launching it probably within the month. So I'll add a link to that.
That is so cool. We will include the link to that in the show notes. If folks are interested in participating, they can reach out. So, thank you so much
Amazing.
for joining me. So, once again, I want to thank Alex for being with me for this interview and for appearing on the podcast. And I want to encourage all of you to go out and get a copy of Entwined, because if I didn't gush enough about it during the interview, I want to be exceptionally clear that this was a good book and that you should go out and get it, both to show support for the fact that we need more polyamorous stories visible in literature, but also just because it's really good and I think you should read it. So the links to that are in the show notes, as are the links to Alex's ongoing project of collecting stories, both that folks are writing for themselves and that they can write for you if you'd like to just sort of do an interview or conversation with Alex and then have them write it for this magazine that they're compiling. Those links are in the show notes, as are links for my upcoming classes, which it's springtime, so I'm doing a million. It's not that bad, but I'm at Wicked Grounds doing a Polyamory 101 on April 8th, and you can find me at the end of April doing a class with Annie Undone, a reboot of our class that we just did on the relationship escalator. This time with Plura, which is what Bloom Community has rebranded as, at the end of the month. So until next week, goodbye, everybody. See you soon.